questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. There are lots of things in our lives that are important to us, but important is all relative. Something can be important to us right now, but be easily replaced by something else tomorrow. Our willingness to keep it or protect it when it's threatened is a measure of its importance to us. And that's for things that exist already. When you instead have a vision of what doesn't yet exist, there's another measure of importance. Why does it matter? And not just to you, but to those who could help you realize it. If it doesn't matter enough to both you and them, a leader has no chance of igniting it. Jonathan's big vision rests in large part on his answer to this question. Jonathan, read the three reference cards again, please.
Illumify. To illuminate the change that matters most to you. Amplify it so it also matters to those who can help realize it. And unify to align in thought and action as a collective to ignite meaningful change. Enleven, verb, enleven, to rise up stronger, lift up, elevate, expand into greater awareness of consciousness and capability.
I love how your fist went up when you read that. Guidelines, please.
Guidelines. Number one, answer from your heart, not from your head. Two, listen to yourself with care and focused attention. Three, do not judge the validity or viability of your answers. This is about expressing significant new initiatives or ideas that do not yet exist.
Excellent. I'm going to pick up on a few things in the guidelines. Have you noticed that you are not saying, beginning a phrase, a response with, I think?
Yes, I felt that slip away.
Good.
During the week.
And with respect to not judging the validity or viability, several times of late, have you noticed you violated that?
Yeah. I felt more...
This may sound crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
So just watch that. Yeah. Allow yourself to surface whatever is there to surface. Yeah. No judgment.
Sure.
Thanks. And now please read the next Amplify question.
Why does this matter? For something to matter, it has to be important. To be important is to have great significance or value. Why is your vision of the future important to you, to them? I'm still feeling the emotion that overwhelmed me in the previous discussion about Ken Loach's film. Daniel Blake. And there's something there about dignity, coming back to our conversation about dignity and the loss of dignity, obviously. So if we have talked about dignity from the beginning of our conversation, we landed on that word very early in our conversation.
Sacred dignity, you said, of children.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that's right. It started with our discussion of heartache and where the heartache lies. As you look at the world, in that scene, we see... I'm not going to say the loss of dignity of the mother. It doesn't feel right. It's the loss of dignity of where she lives, It's the loss of the nation's dignity. She has lost her home. She's been deprived of her home, her rightful home. Huh?
She being?
The mother here, the mother who has gone into a food bank and opened her out of sheer desperation. Has opened a can of food and is feeding herself from the can in a food bank. Mm-hmm. So the loss, it is not she who has lost dignity. It is her country that has lost its dignity. And she has been deprived of her home. I'm trying to occasionally bring us back to the home because that's central to
so important to
the vision.
Yeah. And you're doing that beautifully.
So a shared, if a shared home, and we said this morning, I think, that that first adjective is so important. It's a shared home, yeah? If it's a shared home where we all live together within the shared home, we have to share the story of ourselves, which is accountability. Marianne, you've often talked about that, the importance of accountability. But also truth, that we have to tell a story of ourselves, which is truthful. And if... I mean, I've said Ken Loach is a great filmmaker. The world of cinema knows he's won countless awards. He is venerated across cinema, world cinema. Mm-hmm. He's a giant of world cinema, Ken Loach. Is he central? Is he a central storyteller within Britain of today? I would say sadly not. I think he is to some degree marginalized, perhaps in the volume, the size of his audience, in the same way that the subject of his films are marginalized. Okay, it seems odd to say that about a celebrated filmmaker, but I think you get my point here. He's not one of the dominant threads or the dominant voices in our national conversation, wrongly, is what I'm saying.
And I wonder then if that's the case, and I apologize, I do not know his work, but I will know it once I emerge from here. I wonder if he reached a level of frustration, quote, I have things to say.
I imagine, if I think of all of his films right back to the start, I imagine an anger must have been there as well, that anger that comes from a place of love. Mm-hmm. Must have been so much anger there as well.
You can relate to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And many of his characters in his films are angry because they've had enough. Mm-hmm. And in that moment of anger, they can't articulate it. The anger has nowhere to go.
Could it be, Jonathan, that he was before his time, he was ahead of his time, that society, even those going to see that film, could recognize it, not probably to the degree that you could, but they weren't at the stage and are only now reaching the stage, perhaps, where it's intolerant now. Because sometimes people have to experience something themselves to be able to see it. They don't see it in others. Mm. They're not lateral thinkers either. So could he have been ahead of his time?
In some ways, yes, I'm sure he was. What I fear now, and this is part of the intolerance and the sense that we've just gone too far, and I feel my own sense of shame looking back on how old.
I thought we cleared that shame.
That film, how old the
film is. Oh, good, not how old you are. No, bravo.
You're helping me to become more accepting of that or defying it.
Defying it.
But I think Daniel Blake came out 2016, around there, 26, 2017.
Okay.
So I wish, what I'm saying is I wish you were right, Marianne, that he
was
prescient.
More recent,
the wake-up call, I think it's more of the conscience, the conscience which is still there saying, come on, this is still happening, this is still happening.
But it was still a trigger point.
Oh, for me personally, absolutely, and many people.
Many
people. So why does this matter? Why does my vision matter? Because at the heart of it in what it's trying to repair. So where we're breaking with the past, yeah? Where today we break with the past, where we are intolerant, it's because of a loss of dignity. And the example I gave was just one example.
And that matters to you because you see what happens when we lose dignity. Why does it matter to those who will listen to you? Why does it matter to them?
I think because together we have to feel a sense of responsibility here. It's not enough to be grateful. One of the great mantras of our age is show gratitude, be grateful. Absolutely. And I've said that many times myself in the course of this conversation over the last 5, 6, 7 days. It is healthy and good to be grateful every day. But it's not enough. It's not enough. And we have to be intolerant of... We have to be intolerant. We cannot tolerate the hunger of our children. And we are responsible for every child in the country where we live. We are responsible for every child. That's not removing... that is not removing responsibility from the parents. What it's saying is... parents, like their children, are born into a particular village or town or city. They have no choice in that. We have no choice in our birth, okay? So we are, as a country, as a community, we are responsible for the story that we tell ourselves about the state of our nation, okay? So we have a responsibility. We have a duty to be truthful in the story that we tell. And if that story reveals suffering, then that opens up a new responsibility, which is to do something about it. So in answer to your question, Marianne, that we have to feel a sense of responsibility. Now, is that going to help that first speech?
Wow.
Calling on people to...
You didn't even need paper to write that one. Man. That is a speech for the ages, Jonathan. What I just heard is a speech for the ages, for your vision. For the ages.
Let me switch it now to the external.
Okay.
Okay, so dignity of the family inside the house, okay? As soon as we are inside the house, how can we tolerate within the house, our shared house? How can we tolerate hunger within our own house?
Within your own house.
How can we do that?
Yeah.
How can we do that?
Well, you've got an example you've cited several times of a mother, the painting, going back to the painting. The mother's not eating because there's a child there.
Yes.
The child's hungry too.
Yes.
But the mother's not eating.
Yes. That's right. That's right.
Because shared home.
Yes.
Many parents have gone hungry to feed their children.
Yes.
When food is scarce.
Yes. Yeah.
Responsibility, back to responsibility, right?
That's right. That's right. Just for a second, it takes me back to 1984. And this was rereading it recently. This is when I saw the power of Orwell's writing, not only as the writer of a dystopia, a dark, 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 terrifying dystopia, but also his sensibility as he wrote about Winston's mother, the mother in the book. Very poignant, very moving. So a real counterpoint to the darkness and the coldness of Oceania, this totalitarian hell. As a counterpoint to that, he's working with memory, the importance of memory, and he remembers his mother. And to exactly what you're saying, Marianne, you've reminded me of this, that it's incredibly poignant where he remembers the last time he saw his mother. The last time he saw his mother is where, in a situation of post-war rationing, I think, the family, his mother, he and his sister have had a tiny share of chocolate, and the mother is trying to divide it between the children. we know, either as mothers, fathers or children, we know the scene. I think we know this, how to share the chocolate between children. And Winston, in a moment of shame in his memory, a moment of deep shame as he remembers his mother, he sees himself snatching away the chocolate and running away into the street. And it's so painful because that's the last time he sees her. He comes back into the house an hour later, 2 hours later, and she's gone.
Where did she go?
We don't know. Okay. He doesn't know. We don't know. It's the last time he sees his mother. So in 1984, it's why is this there? It's because the importance of memory. The character Winston is trying to get a grip back on his own reality through memory, and that memory is part of his desire to stay human and alive, but also the search for dignity, or to restore dignity in some way, to be truthful to his memory, and to confront the shame of his own behavior, the mm-hmm. way he behaved.
Mm-hmm. But I wonder if in particular it's related to his mother, because you've spoken so passionately about mother, mm-hmm. and you named your novel Mother Earth.
Mother Europe.
Sorry, whoa, okay. That was an old...
It's okay.
Okay, no. Mother Europe.
Yep.
I'll share with you that my beloved father-in-law, European.
Yes.
Right, European, born in Romania. And in 1943, he and his family were taken from their home, their farm in Romania, herded into cattle cars and taken to Auschwitz. And there he lost his mother and several siblings. And I met him many years later. I was privileged to know him for about 35 years, I suppose. He lived long beyond expectation. And in all of those years, I cannot count the number of meals we had together, the meals I would make for him when he would come into our home, whether it was breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Or whether I was in his home, he was a fabulous cook. There was never, and I can attest to this, there was never a meal in which he did not mention his mother. Because as a child, before they were wrenched from their home, he, little farm boy, his dad would be out tilling the fields, I suppose, and he adored his mother, and he would sit at her feet or by her side and watch her cook. So everything he ended up cooking was what he remembered, memory of his mother, and I think in a way to honor her legacy for him. So mother, yeah. Back to Mother
back
Europe.
To mother. Yeah. And from there back to the card. Why does this matter? Why is this vision important to me? So it's the loss of dignity in our old world, the world with which we need to break, mm-hmm. and where we need to break with the past. So the intolerance of this indignity, the intolerance of indignity. But let me switch it to the external as well. There's also something more urgent about survival, our own survival. We've talked a lot about thriving, our ability to develop as human beings and to live our fullest lives through each other, through mm-hmm. education, but also through each other, through our relationships, our ability to let go of anxiety and fear. We've talked about that. But then there are the things that threaten us from the outside. And if the vision that I've articulated in its briefest form, the shared home, where we live together in our dignity and our freedom,
respect for each other.
Loving respect mm-hmm. for each other and our differences mm-hmm. and mindful of our need for each other. Okay, if that's the core.
To live in community.
Absolutely. If that's the core of our vision, It matters to me because I feel today that it's under threat. I will go very briefly back to why Ukraine matters to all of this. It's because at the most visible, urgent level, we have a country that is fighting for its own survival. Fighting for its own survival so that it can fulfill and enjoy the political choice that it made to be part of the European family and to rejoin its rightful European home. So it's fighting for its own survival, even as it so that it can
come home.
Exactly. Now, what that means for us who are in this home already is that if we do not help Ukraine to come home, we will lose our home. I believe. I think we will lose our home.
So even though it's Ukraine right now that is under existential threat, what you see is that all European countries are under existential threat if they do not welcome and make space for Ukraine to come home.
Yes.
The house, the cracks in the walls of the house.
Yeah.
Will force the house to tumble.
Absolutely. And part of that takes us back to dignity. We have lost too much dignity already over the last decade as we pretended to ourselves again and again and again that this was not going to happen. It was not going to be a threat. It could be contained, you know. We cannot lose any more dignity around this question. We simply cannot.
Do you see then, you've just made another declaration. Do you see, Jonathan, that what is evident to you needs to be evident to them? So back to this question, why does this matter? It closes with why is your vision of the future important to you and then to them? Again, evident to you that we've lost so much dignity, even over the last 10 years, that may not be evident to them. And unless it is, unless you can make it evident, make the case, for example, it won't matter to them to the degree it matters to you. That's Amplify.
Yes. And it's now that I realize more clearly perhaps than ever before, and you were right, Marianne, you were right on several occasions to just gently draw me back from the particular mission of Ukraine, the challenge of Ukraine, and my sense of that, my role in that.
Yeah, well, your intricate knowledge of it, right?
And you were right to do that because if we just momentarily puncture a hole through this conversation and go down into the actual reality on the ground, I'm happy to say that there are many political leaders in Europe right now who absolutely agree with everything I've just said. It wouldn't be controversial to them at all.
Okay.
And that's truth, that reality has given me a lot of hope and courage over the last 18 months. So how does that relate to the card here? And this is where we're sort of coming out of the Illumify process for a second and just actually going into the situation of today. Why is this vision important to them? What I would want, and again, here I'm not alone, is to say to fellow Europeans, we've just got to stick with this, yeah? So we're still in the old world. There is not new ground here yet. That's why I'm saying we're outside of the game here. We're outside of the game. This is just, I've gone through this hole into the actual world of today for a second, so out of the podcast and into the world today. We just have to keep going. We just have
can't
to keep
retreat.
Going. No. So
yeah,
back into the conversation.
Thank you.
So why does this matter? It's these two things, and they are as I look at the card again, why is this vision of the future important?
Why is your vision of the future?
Yeah, why is my vision important? It's this. The two things go in hand. The loss of dignity inside the house. The loss of dignity inside the house. How we have failed to tell a truthful story of what is happening inside our house, inside our own house. And that can only weaken the house, weaken the foundations. Yes, you talked about the cracks in the walls, the ceiling. This is what happens. This is why the pursuit of truth in the story that we tell about our own community is so important. Just as it is for ourselves as individual human beings, that we have to pursue, at least try again and again to get to the truth of who we are, difficult and painful though that can be sometimes. And then on the external, there's a mirror image here where if we are not willing to defend our shared house on the outside from those who would seek to destroy it, who would happily destroy it, mm-hmm. there is an equal loss of dignity. There is an equal loss of dignity. And so it's equally damaging in a different way. So I think we've established perhaps here, certainly for the vision, my vision, there is something here about what's in the house, what's inside the house, what keeps it strong, why is it a shared house? Mm-hmm. But also the need to defend that house from those who would seek to destroy it.
Mm-hmm. Because that would serve their interests.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Here's a question about defense. Is it exclusively the responsibility of the military and the warriors to defend? Is that a job that society can allocate or relegate to a specific group?
That traditional sense of defense has that's why these recent years for Europeans, I think, have felt so shocking. The return of trenches. We thought trenches was something that belonged to a world of 100 years ago.
Yeah.
It wasn't that long ago that we commemorated the First World War and the shocking loss of life in the First World War.
And the hand-to-hand combat, even.
Yes, that aspect of it that just seems so brutal. But here we are, yeah, back to trenches and battlefields and tanks. I think that speaks sadly to the delusion, the complacency.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you've used that word a few times, Marianne, mm. complacency. Europe's mm. complacently, sadly, over the last 10, 20 years. This is it. Why do we need new ground? Why do we need new ground? Because even if the soil was once fruitful and rich and fertile, and we built a strong democracy in our soil, stability, long periods of stability can lead to complacency.
Mm-hmm. And what happens when complacency sets in? What happens to action?
Yes, we become paralyzed, we become mm-hmm. slow, mm-hmm. we become sleepy. And that also takes me back to that inner, very personal, intimate discussion that we had about our personal truth. You know, what am I not willing to change? That was why that card, as we talked about it, it became more and more interesting, because the first answer was obvious. I'm not going to change what I believe in. You know, I'm not going to change who I am. Your state, Catherine, that's...
Yes.
I'm not going to change my core of truth, the values that I believe in. Fine, that's all good. But there was something telling me it's not enough. And it's I'm not going to change that. But also, I'm not going to allow that to harden as a hard truth that's just written in stone? When we say something's in written, in, it's written in stone.
It's carved in stone.
Carved in stone. There you go. Thank you. We say that something's carved in stone. Well, that's fine until it chips and breaks and crumbles. Then having written it in stone doesn't look so good. Yeah, it needs, and that's why we talked about something that was more supple, that you know, language. And I think we felt this from the beginning, haven't we? That it, as we search for a vision that might be political, language has its limits, and language isn't the ultimate expression of the vision. You know, a constitution is not enough to build a country.
It's the skeleton of sorts.
Yes, absolutely.
And it brings up a fascinating point, because it's easy to paint a lack of will or a lack of willingness, let's say, as a fixedness, a stubbornness, a rigidity.
And an intransigence.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
You're not willing to change. You're not willing to do.
Mm.
And in this context, the word is used to represent a lack of compromise. Mm-hmm.
An intolerance for less.
Mm. Yes.
That's different from settling. And take this settling idea into the home. When we move into a new home, we laud ourselves for settling in.
Yes, yeah.
And going back to the question of whether we can, as society, relegate or delegate the act of defense to a specific group, let's add some words to that sentence. Defense of the home. Can we afford to point a finger at who's responsible for keeping that safe?
Mm. Yeah. This is where I think we have to expand beyond. I think this is where we have to expand beyond my first answer, which was that sadly, yes, we are back into feels like a traditional world of trenches, but we know it's not, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So remember our definition of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Leaders meaningfully challenge the status quo. I attribute this, by the way, to Morley Katz.
Right.
Who happens to be my husband, but who did all the heavy lifting on that one in his doctorate on leadership. Yeah. So you either meaningfully challenge the status quo or you resist meaningful challenges. But the reality is, in this case, is it about defending against being pulled into that new territory, remaining sovereign? Defending the status quo, resisting challenges to it.
Yes, good question. Good question.
And it may be both.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, Jonathan, your vision is of challenging the status quo yourself, creating the new. And on the other, as it affects Europe,
yeah,
it may be resisting challenges to that status quo.
Yeah.
Why does this matter? Why does your vision of that shared home with all its beautiful attributes, why does it matter to them?
If we just stay for a second in our current example, where we have to be intolerant is if we look at the suffering at the moment across our European home, where there are cracks in our own home today. Coming back to the question on the card, why does this matter? If we're really digging again now, if we're back in the business of digging.
Yes, please.
Yeah, why does this matter? But we have to win. Let's get away from negatives. Mm-hmm. Let's get back to a positive. We have to show to ourselves that our vision of what is possible is right and full of truth and attainable. You used the word possibilities this morning, Marianne. I can't remember the exact context. There was something about what is possible. Mm-hmm. And that's actually not a statement of some practical... There's not a limitation there or settling for something less or... there's something elevated in that. To show that something is possible, the possibility is actually something quite heroic. To feel that we feel what is possible is not a limitation of our ambition. This is not saying that we can only do what is possible. No, it's in our commitment, first of all, to the idea of truth, that there is something called the pursuit of truth, that the pursuit of truth in its different forms across our community, through journalism, through art, through our own personal lives,
actions.
So where we pursue the truth as part of a vision of the good life. If we can commit to this, if we can commit to the idea of a shared home, where we manage to reconcile individual freedom, where we are free to think and do what we want within the law, but that deep, deep human freedom, reconcile that with the need for each other, how we need each other. If we can perform this miraculous juggling act of building a home where we don't deny or shy away from these competing values, but show to ourselves, we don't need to prove it to anybody else. We don't need to prove it to anybody else. We're doing this for ourselves. To bring it right back. Okay, let's come back down from concepts and values. Right, let's bring it back down to the street. Yeah. That example we discussed this morning, Marianne, about your going into a shop and having an exchange with a woman who runs a shop and who sewed a piece of your clothing, yeah, and where you together you stepped outside of the world of transaction and economic exchange and were somewhere else. This is what I wanted to say earlier, that's not an example of two people being kind to each other. It is, but it's something else. It's something else. And what we're trying for here in our vision is where we say that this is the possibility. This is the possibility that we can build, and this is just one part of the vision, yeah? But we can build an economy which is rooted in the values, the culture that we have, so that it is that the economy is nourished by trust, our respect for each other, and where the forces of competition, entrepreneurship, invention, they can all take place. Mm-hmm. You know, let's be clear about this. Mm-hmm. But they're taking place within a shared culture. So,
in a shared home, to me, as you say that, Jonathan, the old ground on which many have, through battles or not, have fortified themselves, their own interests, their capital, for example. And if we look at that perspective, it's been a win-lose. I win, you lose.
Yes.
Whereas new ground is you win, I win. But it's more than that. It is, for me, about enabling each of us in that shared home, in that new economy, in that exchange or interchange at whatever, in whatever regard, each of us emerges enlivened. We're lifted up because we see the possibilities realized. that it doesn't have to be win-lose. I take from you, you take from me. Mm-hmm. And we're ever on guard. What are you taking from me? Mm. But rather, how can we each gain by this, be uplifted by this, expand by this, become stronger from this?
Yes.
Not weaker, not less than.
Yes, yes. It's exactly that. If you share a culture and there's the deep trust, mutual trust across the community, mm-hmm. you're not counting. Mm-hmm. You're not counting the change in your pocket. You know it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. You're not going to shortchange each other mm-hmm. because it's not... The success of your day is not measured in...
How much more you gained
yes,
than the other.
Exactly.
And how weakened you left them, diminished you left
that's
them.
Right. That's right. We're not abolishing the need for money or its importance. We're not saying that. But
we're saying it's equally important from everyone's perspective. It's
yes.
not about hoarding
yes.
to the deprivation of others.
Yes, yes. If the economy is reduced only to transaction, mm-hmm. if it's extricated...
It takes the human out of it, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. And what you're left with, at the end of the day, you mm-hmm. you just count the coins in that are still in your mm-hmm. pocket, and mm-hmm. that's the measure of your day. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. there is nothing else.
Yeah.
There is nothing else.
Yeah.
So take this back to the question, why does this matter? If we can sign up to this vision today, and I can feel myself being pulled into speech mode.
Yay. You know,
if we sign up to this vision today, it's important that we declare, and celebrate victory as it happens.
As it happens. Oh, it's so good you see that. Absolutely. Because we're... As we need to continue moving toward that vision, mm. when you mark the points at which you've advanced, as you get closer and closer,
yeah.
ever closer,
yes.
absolutely celebrate it.
Yes.
Acknowledge it
yes.
again, because it's so interesting. You know, I'll take a corporate example for you if that helps anyone,
yeah.
you or anyone listening to this. So leadership emerges through words and actions. And I've had over the years leaders say to me, corporate leaders, managerial leaders, say to me, so I did it. Why don't they see it? So how do we know our leaders? How do we see our leaders? You know, political leaders, have any of us except you? I have met some, of course. Catherine may or may not have. We're just a sample of three. But do we ever actually, most of us, get a chance to meet a political leader? The leader of our nation, the leader of our city, the leader of our community? No. So how do we know them? We know them through hearing them speak, through things they say that are either picked up by third-party journalists or that we hear them say it directly through a medium such as television or print or online. So we only know them through their words. We often do not see them. They can make promises, commitments through their language. We're going to do this. Elect me. We're going to do this. But we may never get to actually see them in action. So they may actually do these things. And this is true of corporate leaders. They do it. And then they get frustrated because people don't know that they've done it. So first of all, words alone. If you just expect to lead through your words, no matter how compelling those words may be, if there is no perception that you've acted on your words, those words, just words, will ultimately erode trust. And when it comes down to asking them to do in concurrence with the words you've declared, when they don't see your own action, they won't. Trust erodes. Now, conversely, if you don't provide words, you just do it. I just did it. Why don't they get it? Okay. So even if they do see it, there is a huge risk that they could misinterpret the action. They may see you do it, but they don't know quite what you're doing or why. So it's the context of the word. The words provide the context, the meaning, the interpretation for them. And that's equally important. So leadership emerges. And often, by the way, again, as I said, they don't see you do it. But even when they do, they can misinterpret. So leadership emerges in words and is made credible through action.
Why is it important to me? Because I have to, in my own life, reach a moment of reconciliation where I feel that this is my truth. It's not the end of the line, as it were. It's not the end, but there has to be a moment to say, right, this is now the moment where I decide, the moment of action, the moment of taking the decision, letting go of the other alternatives. I can't say to myself that I need more time to consider this, or I'm not sure yet. Or the moment of action is when you stop thinking, considering, analysing. You stop looking for new bits of evidence. You just have to act. Okay,
just so, do it.
Yeah, yeah, ultimately that's where you end up. Yeah. So the elements of my vision, those competing values have swirled around within me, a bit like a kaleidoscope over 30 years of my life. But perhaps now at some point, I mean, that at some level, that is also what a vision is. I think it's one aspect, or it's one way of looking at a vision, where you reach a point where what's the moment of unity here? What's the moment of unity that you see that these competing ideas can and must be reconciled? It's not a moment of compromise. It's a moment of recognizing that the wholeness of what's on offer here, how it all comes together. You remember I talked about the idea of this is a sphere. Fiction as a sphere. You write a story and you're digging, you're moving forward. Then at some point, as you progress, the story starts to fold on itself and you're in a sphere. You're not in something linear anymore. I think it's the same with the vision here. Feeling the reconciliation of these competing values, that there is wholeness. There is wholeness here. So I'm finishing on that note there. Why does this matter to me? Because the moment of integrity here is where you say, okay, now I'm ready. Now I'm ready. Because in my own mind, in my own vision, I have reconciled these different parts.
In answering the question, why does it matter, Jonathan first declared that we have to tell a story of ourselves, of our home, that is truthful, no matter how difficult it may be to admit the cracks in its walls and foundation. As the conversation continued, Jonathan surfaced more about his vision each time he asked the question of why it matters. The loss of dignity came up repeatedly, and he extended it from inside the home, ourselves, our communities, our nations, to outside the home when it may need defending. He's seeing more and more and gaining clarity. He's contrasting what's on the old ground with what needs to be on the new, and he's taking it beyond him and the vision he holds dear, looking at why it matters to all those in that shared home. And that will continue as he answers the other Amplify questions designed to make his vision matter to those who can help him realize it. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.